Hare Krishna. As you probably are well aware of, the title of our retreat is Disappointment, Difficulty, Distress, Disaster. So it doesn't sound like it's going to be a happy, happy, happy type of retreat, but there is actually so much good news within the difficulties of material existence. But the first, or the initial point I'd like to make is that the material world is a very difficult place by its very nature. In the 8th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, where Krishna describes them, begins by describing the material world, explains that it's a reflection of the spiritual world. That means that what goes on in this world is something like what goes on in the spiritual world, but what goes on in this world doesn't have substance. It's a reflection. It doesn't have the substance that the spiritual world has. And therefore, by its very nature, is a frustrating place, because it is something like the spiritual world, but the taste, the true taste that we're hankering for, the pleasure, the satisfaction that we're hankering for, doesn't exist here in the same way that the taste of the samosa, of the fruit, of the rice, of the jalebi. It doesn't exist in the reflection of those items. So if you're extremely hungry and you see all that tasty food within the mirror, in the reflection, and then your hunger is deep, your longing for sustenance, for food, and you see it right in front of you, but you cannot get the taste that you want. You cannot eat it. So therefore, the material world, being so similar to that, is a frustrating place. And Krishna explains this in the Bhagavad Gita and in so many places. But in the 8th chapter, where he describes the material world as a reflection, he says, after returning to me, mamupetya panar janma dukhalayam asashvatam, that after returning to me, after achieving me, there is no repeated birth. There is no death. There is no disease. The frustrations that exist here do not exist in the spiritual world, in the same way that the frustrations of trying to taste the reflection don't exist when the actual feast is before you. And therefore, the great souls, they give up this land of dukkalayam ashashvatam, this temporary, miserable place, in favor of something far superior, samsadim paramam gatim. They achieve my paramam gatim. What does paramam gatim mean? I'm sorry, I couldn't hear that properly. Yes, that supreme destination. What is that supreme destination? That supreme destination for the Gaudiya Vaishnava is Goloka Vrindavan, the land of Krishna, the land of service to Krishna, the land that has supreme sweetness, the land that the Brahma Samhita describes, where every step is like dancing and every speech is like song, and everywhere can be heard the sound of the flute, Krishna's flute. And there are cows everywhere, and and the land is actually alive. That's one thing one notices after one's been in Vrindavan for some time, is that the land is alive. It means that the land reciprocates with you. It's alive, it's not dead, dull matter, and this is even the Vrindavan of the so-called material world, Boma Vrindavan. It's alive. And here, we deal with dead matter. And when one deals continuously with dead matter, it deadens the soul, it deadens the consciousness. And when one deals with true life, the life of the soul, the life of Braja, the life of Sridharmayapur, then one, a certain part of oneself, it comes awake in such a wonderful way that we feel like we're alive. Some part of us comes alive. So when that part of us that comes alive is truly alive and only alive, and there's no part of our consciousness that's going in the exact opposite direction, which is usually the case, then we are home, then we are with Krishna, then we are alive, then we're acting according to our true nature, and then we are us, so to speak. So dukkhalayam ashashvatam is the nature of the material world, but it is not the nature of reality. And it is important that we come to grips in a mature way with the fact that the material world is in fact a place of misery, and accept this. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur has said that if one accepts in the depths of one's consciousness that there is no situation in the material world, regardless of what it is, that can actually make one happy. Consider that point. There is no situation, he says, in the material world that can make us happy, regardless of what it is, regardless of what our dreams are, regardless of the if only this had happened, that takes over our consciousness, regardless of if I only had that, and if only if this didn't happen, and only if I had so many if onlys in our life, only if I was a little bit different, I had this ability, and I didn't have that disability. So Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur says that if we have given up all those dreams, for finding a fully satisfying material life, then a person like that has taken the greatest step forward in his spiritual life, his spiritual advancement, and his journey back to Godhead. But very often, we keep the little dreams like that, even after being devotees, after being aspiring to be devotees, we keep some dreams alive in our heart that if I get this, and if I get that, and then I'll be able to do this and that. And hidden in all those dreams is then I'm going to be happy here. But actually the reality is that we're not going to be happy here. It's just simply not possible. Krishna himself takes a stamp, and he stamps the material world, dukkhalayam ashashvatam. It is actually a miserable place. So we've called this retreat is difficulty, distress, disaster, and the first one, we could add a lot of other disappointment and discomfort, we could add a lot more to it, to our title, and that's actually the material world. And again, this isn't negative, it's not cynical, but it's actually recognizing the nature of the material world. There's a gradation, these, as Jagat Chaitanya Mataji did. I also did my dictionary research And here's how we define disappointment. So disappointment is relatively minor. It's dissatisfaction resulting when one's expectations aren't achieved. When I wanted to, there's one young man here. I know he wanted to get a particular into a particular degree. In when he applied to the university, and he didn't get the exact one he wanted. And actually, you don't get into when you're applying for your university, you don't get into the exact. And there's a disappointment in that. And something in the heart becomes a little bit dead, and the consciousness goes down. But it's relatively minor, and you get over it. So, beyond that one, after the disappointment stage that material life constantly gives you, is difficulty. It's not just a dissatisfaction when one's expectations aren't achieved, but difficulty, actual difficulty, a circumstance that you're in that is almost, not quite, but almost beyond your ability to deal with it. Like what happens when you lose your job or something terrible happens in your family life or in your career life, or you're afraid of it. It's a difficulty that it's almost beyond your ability to deal with. And it takes a lot of effort, a lot of control to keep your spirits up. So we call that as difficulty. So there's disappointment, then there's difficulty, and don't worry, it's not over yet. Then, beyond that kind of difficulty is distress, a state of adversity, when something goes so strongly against what you want that you're in extreme mental or physical pain. Like I don't know if you have ever been in a difficult car accident. I know some devotees who have. And such a stress comes from things like that. Or you lose something that you had worked so hard to gain. Distress, you don't know how you're going to cope with it. And you can't sleep at night, perhaps. There's the famous depression that overcame much of the world in the 1920s and 1930s. There were people who had invested their whole life, their whole savings, in the stock market. And when the stock market crashed, people were jumping out of high buildings and killing themselves. They could not see a future in their life. Their distress brought on, actually, the next stage, a disaster. And then there is disaster, an event that results in extreme, usually immediate stress, loss, ruin, or misfortune. When I was in Christchurch again, and it's such an amazing experience. I remember one night I was sleeping on the second story of the temple, on the second floor of the temple, and suddenly the room started going like this, and it was so extreme, going this way and that way and that way. And somehow or another, I wasn't actually afraid. I started to chant. And because one reason we don't fear is because we're in ignorance that buildings do collapse. So anyway, I wasn't afraid, but my body became terrified, even though I wasn't terrified. And my heart started beating, and I couldn't go back to sleep, even though I wasn't even actually afraid. But so many people, and there was a terrible earthquake in Gujarat some years ago, and all over the world, and all over the world, ferries collapse, go under, this happens, There's an avalanche in the Himalayas. People are trying to enjoy, climb up to the top of Mount Everest, and suddenly all the experienced guides, there's an avalanche, and they're all crushed and lost, or plane crashes. Has anyone ever been in a plane that suddenly drops altitude like that? How do you feel? Terrified. Because there's it's out of your control, and there's nothing you can do, and you realize it could be over. You could lose your life, and then what? You know, and not only your life, you can lose everything that you feel is yours. So, and a disaster is when these things start happening, and it's out of your control. So usually, irremediable stress, that means it's non-reversible, loss, ruin, misfortune. So this is actually the essence of the material world. Not that there's not pleasure in the material world, there is pleasure, but it's flickering. And therefore, one has to keep oneself in illusion, practically speaking, otherwise one's going to wonder, when's the next disappointment, difficulty, distress, or disaster going to come? Is it going to be when I'm walking down the street right now, or if I'm, when I leave, is something going to happen to my family, to my friends, to this, that? So unless we forget the nature of the material world, we practically speaking can't live here. So, let's see we organize this in this way, yes. But the point being that this is the irreversible nature of material existence. And it sounds very cynical and bad news in one sense, but you can't do anything about it. This could be one of those irreversible things when difficulty, distress, it unavoidably accompanies our dealings in the material world. There's no avoiding it. So here we were describing these things already. I had forgotten, I had put this all down in our presentation, audiovisual presentation. Dissatisfaction, we don't achieve our expectations. I'm not sure what level this seems to be moving to. I think it's just disappointment. Difficult. Now, it could be coming to the difficulty. A circumstance beyond, almost beyond one's ability to deal with that requires a great effort to bear or overcome. Distress. So this, the point we wish to make, this is the actual nature of the material world. Not that there's not happiness, but it's always intermediate with these type of experiences. And then, and it's all temporary too. And then disaster comes. So, we want to hear about how to cure this, obviously. And to understand the cure, you have to understand what the cause is. So let's talk a little about what the cause of the difficulties of the material world are. So the point again is that suffering unstoppably. What does unstoppably mean? No, not exactly, no end. Continuous, but I'm looking for it from a different point of view.
Even if you try, you cannot stop.
You can't, there's nothing you can do to stop it. And what we would like to do in life is to push away all the difficulties and pull towards us all the things that we expect are going to bring us happiness. And we're speaking, of course, on the material level here. So unstoppable means that you can't push away the difficulties, etc., the four D's of life. They universally exist. Now, why do I put the term universally in there? Yeah, but a little more direct. So it's unstoppable, But also there's nowhere you can go that you'll be safe from it. And Krishna himself notes this point, and he addresses the solution. And please, everyone, let's see if we can get it to actually be there, other than in its ghost form. Otherwise, we'll have an Easter ghosty. Come on, please. Okay, thank you. Everyone together. Abrahma bhuvana loka bhuvana arya arjuna Bhamu Pekya Dukam Teya Unatajamanavichete. So from Brahma's planet, which is the topmost planet, raise your hand if you've been to Brahmaloka recently. But it's really nice there, and it's not cold, that's the first point. But it's not in this subtle material realms. It's not like the gross material realms, and the pleasure is on a completely different level. Like all the different planets, that when we gradate them from lowest to the highest, there's still pleasure there, but the pleasure is on different levels, on the lower planets, or the middle planets, or the Indraloka, or the Janaloka, Tapaloka, Mahaloka, Swarga, Janaloka, and Brahmaloka. They're on different levels. And the more subtle the level of pleasure, the deeper the pleasure is. Subtle means it's closer to me, the soul. And in the middle planetary systems, the pleasures are quite gross. When we think of a place that's a wonderful place, we think of where you can just eat and you can just enjoy in this way and enjoy in that way, all on gross levels. And there's unlimited videos or something like that, or people try to do that when they play they live their virtual lives in the computer land. But in Brahmaloka, the pleasure is so deep, the depth of satisfaction, even on Indraloka, on these higher, the depth of satisfaction is so deep, and the distress is practically non-existent because the satisfaction is so deep, but it's not spiritual. And in Brahmaloka, though, you don't have to come down again to the material world. When there's a destruction, when destruction takes place, then you can choose where you go. You want to go to Vaikuntha, you want to go to Goloka Vrindavan, or you want to go to Brahman and merge. You can do those things. There's so much potency in the depth of your position, but it is not the spiritual world, and it lacks the essential sweetness that the spiritual, what to speak of Goloka Vrindavan, Krishna is not prominent there. But yet Krishna himself says, if you go to this topmost planet, or you come down to the earth planet, or you go to the lower planets where there is continuous distress only, when there is continuous fear only, you're either eating someone else, or that other someone else is eating you, and there's constantly fear, and there's always someone smaller than you that you can gobble up, and there's always someone bigger than you. So you're always, and if you see, I've learned so much about life by studying the monkeys of Vrindavan and the dogs of Vrindavan, and you see it with the monkeys, they're always fighting with each other. Even amongst their own families, they're fighting and fighting and fighting. The only thing that stops them fighting in their own family is when they're fighting another family. Then the whole family gets together and fights, and they combine, and they all go. But But what, even when they have food, the first thing they do when they get some food is they look around. Before they'll eat it. Did you ever notice that in your Vrindavan days? They just look around to make sure no one's going to attack them for their food. So what a life! What to speak of all the fleas and the lice that are always biting them, and someone's always attacking them. And if someone, and if a human sees them, they immediately start throwing things at them, or chases them with a stick. So the distress is so much greater, so much greater. So from, but even in the topmost position, where the happiness is greater, the distress is always there too. So from the highest position to the lowest position, and it's important that we become convinced of this fact, that there is no situation in any position universally in the material realm that can bring us the satisfaction that we long for. And it, again, as Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur said, that if one actually realizes this deeply, which naturally stops his longing for that perfect situation or that perfect job or that perfect house or that perfect partner or the perfect child or the perfect car or the perfect fame or whatever it is. If one stops that longing because he knows that there is no situation that's going to feed him, the soul, the person, he's taken the greatest step forward in his spiritual life. So the reason why the material world is such a difficult place is because we don't belong here. There is an incompatibility between ourselves, actually who we are, and our situation in the material world, because this material world is always changing, it's always shifting, and and we ourselves are eternal, and we long for the eternal. And you see what materialistic people do to quiet that longing is they're always eating, they're always drinking, they have to be watching something, distracting themselves, changing this, changing that. Because if they stopped and just thought, am I happy? Am I satisfied? What's going on? But what's wrong? And because they inherently see that there is no solution and they don't have the spiritual depth, therefore it's a constant series of distractions, one after the next. Television, internet, continuously. How many channels do people have? You have a satellite dish, and how many channels of television can you get? Does anyone have an estimation?
100.
And if you have your internet hooked up, what can you get? You can get unlimited distractions. And then, because nothing, and you see it with the kids, they'll be, if they're watching television, they'll be watching one thing and be switching it, and they'll be watching four things or five things simultaneously, and going back and forth and back and forth between one and one. Because the mind is so disturbed, it's just, it can't be satisfied with any one thing. So you have to be doing five things at once, but it's not satisfaction you get. You get distraction from one dissatisfying thing to the next dissatisfying thing to the next dissatisfying thing. So there is an inherent natural mismatching. I think we're going to have to keep windows open. Why don't we open all the windows a little bit so we neither get cold? We'll try to find that perfect balance, which is impossible, between getting cold and being warm but falling asleep and having no air in here. So There's an incompatibility between ourselves, who are eternal, and a material situation. And the way that that it's comprised of different elements. Oh, first, we should keep up here. These are Krishna's words. From the highest planet in the material world down to the lowest, all, I should have underlined that, all are places of misery where repeated birth and death take place. But Krishna is explaining the solution to this problem. But one who attains to my abode, Goloka Vrindavan, O son of Kunti, O Arjuna, he never takes birth again. So here we are, suffering's cause. There's incompatibility. That's the essential point we wanted to make. And that which comprises the incompatibility, there's the first layer around the soul, around the eternal soul, is the false ego, ahankar. And the function of ahankar, or false sense of self, we have so many identities. I could think of myself as an Australian, as an American Australian who lives most of his life in India, in Vrindavan. So I'm an American, I'm an Australian, I'm a male, I'm a 67-year-old, I'm a father, I'm a husband, I'm a teacher, I'm a devotee. So many different, these are called upadis, like overlays upon who I actually am. And who am I actually? Again, Mahaprabhu has said it, Gopi Bharata Parakamalaya Dasa Dasana Das, or Krishner Nitya Das. I am Krishna's servant. But the function of false ego, that's my real ego, the function of false ego is to give me a false sense of who I am. And the essence a false ego, or the false sense of who I am, is I am a person, or I'm an enjoyer. This is the essence of false ego. I am meant to enjoy. I am a pleasure-seeking entity, and everything that I perceive, everything in the material world, or the material world itself, is a field for my enjoyment. Defining myself and the rest of existence is meant for my pleasure. And the advertising industry takes full advantage of that by presenting to us this, take this, enjoy this. It's based on the false ego. And then the next step, or the next covering, is there it comes. It's the mind. So the mind grabs onto something, it accepts something, and this is meant for me. So if you want to torture a small child, bring them into Toys R Us. Because one thing after the next they see, and their mind locks on it. I want it. I want to enjoy it. One thing after the next, and eventually the kid starts crying out of frustration. So that's the business of the mind, to lock, to accept something as if it's meant for my pleasure, or reject something. This I don't want. This is going to be bad for my pleasure. All based on false ego, that I'm meant to enjoy. I don't want this. I don't want this. I don't want that. I don't want that. But it's all based on me as being the central figure of existence, which is obviously an illusion. And then there's the material intelligence. And what the intelligence does is make a plan how to get this for my pleasure or to avoid that. Isha Dvesha Samutena, attraction and desire based on the mind. What the mind has grasped, held on to, the intelligent schemes and plans, the material polluted intelligence, it's scheming and planning with itself as the center. And if you get a materially intelligent person, very materially intelligent, and they're very focused on the level of false ego, that I am going to do this. And if you get in the way of such a person, it's very dangerous. Because over money, over position, over something, over anything, you can be killed. You're in my way. Not you personally. Don't worry about it. I'm not going to. I didn't really mean it either. But that's how people think. This is described in the Bhagavad Gita. This defines material life. And even a place you'd think that where it doesn't exist, like universities, in if you ask anyone who's part of a department of something, even like philosophy or education, the worst kind of politics takes place over who's going to be the department chairman or something like that, which actually has no meaning really. You know, so what? You're the department chairman somewhere of the university of something, a department of English, and you're the chairman. And the worst kind of petty politics takes place. And universities are famous for this, and it's the last place you'd think it would be there, because one expects the university teachers, or one would think or hope, when one is young, that you know, they're above such petty, insignificant things. But this is what happens. And when someone is materially intelligent and powerful because of that, and you're in that way, it's extremely dangerous. You know, people, assassinations happens all the time over big positions such as king or whatever, or big finances and things like that. So there's one verse in the Bhagavatam that compares this material intelligence to a prostitute that dresses herself in different ways at different times to attract the mind of a man. So the material intelligence dresses the same old pleasures of the material world, making believe it's something new. And the last time you touched this pleasure, it didn't make you happy. But this time, in a new dress, this is the job of the material and polluted intelligence, to convince you, the mind, yes, this I want now. And once the mind grabs onto something, it can hold very, very tight, even though it's proven that it's not going to bring the happiness that you are longing for, because it's based on false ego. But in this way, Brahmanda Brahmate, we travel from position in the material world, desiring, to the next, to the next, to the next, to the next. So, then the next one in this explanation, this, the function of Maya, please listen to this very carefully. And this is something that the Prabhupada, we'll listen to an excerpt of Prabhupada speaking, and he makes a funny comparison. What he's speaking about science in one sense, that science is promising you so many things, and it's like their promises are like appealing, a lawyer's appealing, saying, "Don't worry, you've been sentenced to death, don't worry," in the high court. But I'm going to make an appeal, and you'll get off on the appeal. But it's already the High Court, the Supreme Court. There's no one to appeal to. So what's Maya's business? And what Maya does it again and again and again and again. And as long as we have a false ego that has this desire to enjoy, we are so prone to fall under the influence of this Maya. And what Maya's function is to give us hope that this time I will be able to succeed and enjoy, even though for the last 4,767,247 times I've tried the same thing and it didn't bring me any happiness. But this time, because the intelligence has dressed it in a different way, this time you will be able to enjoy. I promise you that. And that's what Maya's position is. Now, Steve, this is from a morning walk. No, it's not. It's from a Bhagavatam class in Mayapur, Sridhar Mayapur, 1973. We have the sound hooked up. Whoops. And we have lost it. Okay. We've got it back. We got it back to the beginning. So maybe you can go forward. We'll have a quick review session. Okay, I'm doing that, right? Yes. Okay, here we go. Suffering's cause, false ego, mind, material intelligence, function of Maya. What is the function of Maya? To give us hope that which is impossible will now be achieved. And it's like appealing. Yes, here we go. Krishna willing. Will it work? Oh, it won't. Does that mean that this computer isn't fast enough? Oh, yes, but it should have been because it was the EXE file. It should have been there. And I don't have the other computer. The file, it should be right there. But it wouldn't have, could you just try it again and see if you can get it working? But it's a very interesting morning walk in any case, where Prabhupada is, he's speaking with Swarup Damodar Prabhu, who later became His Holiness Bhakti Swarup Damodar Maharaj. Let's try this. Well, we're this far, but now see if you can do it manually on there. On the right. Is it? No, we lost it again. That's such a nice excerpt. Maybe you can unplug it and see if you can get it to work. Because if that one doesn't work, maybe the next one will work. And then we'll really have problems. We'll have difficulties, we'll have disasters, we'll have the whole thing. Especially if I really get angry. So Prabhupada's telling a story, and it's one of the most, I don't know what word to describe it, what Prabhupada described it. If you unplug it, and see if we can get it going though, but then we all won't have to be confused. If you just unplug it and do it on the screen and then plug it in,
No, I think that there's only 1 second left after that.
Oh, really? Okay, it's the next one. Then it's, go to number two, that's why. Don't worry, there's hope. But this time, there is hope. We're ready for number two. That's what the problem was. This one had finished. Let's see. All your expectations are up there. Anticipation.
So,
yes.
Indra can supply water just with your requirement, or sometimes he does not supply. Or sometimes he supplies over requirement, Otivrishti, Anavrishti. Anavrishti means no rain. And Otivrishti means excessive. You don't want excessive or less. We want just proper. But this is under the control of the devata. You cannot say, you may be a very great scientist, you cannot say that it is under my control. When there is no rainfall, you cannot say, all right, we are scientists, we have cleared in grain. You can theoretically say, now we are making progress in future. All these rascals say, in future. And we also believe that in future, these rascals will give us all happiness. Not now. Now you die. This guy, a clever lawyer, his client was condemned to death, to be hanged. I have seen it in Aravan High Court. And still he is patting him. Don't do it. I shall get you released by appeal. Now you can go to be hanged. And I shall get you released. Like that. I have seen it. One big European barrister, in those days European barristers were very valuable, Mr. Alstone. I had also one case in High Court. So one man, one medical practitioner, he killed his servant in the operation of very mercilessly. The servant was implicated with his wife to revenge. He called the servant in the operation room. The servant did not know that he was to be killed. And immediately he was captured, chloroformed, and mercilessly killed with knife. And then, packed up in a box, he was taking the corpse in a different place to throw away. In the meantime, a police officer was passing. He saw the drops of blood is coming out of the box.
What
he
realized.
So this case was, then the doctor was condemned to death. So Mr. Alston was appointed his lawyer. So he was solicing, don't worry, I shall get you released by appeal. So our so-called scientists, they also say like that, in future, we shall do this. In future. Now we go to hell. But in future, they cannot do anything. Vaivijhesha gunamai mama maya durata. Nature's law is so strong. The so-called childish scientists, they cannot give any relief. That is not possible. That is not possible. It is simply false promise. And those who are fools and rascals, they believe that in future, by what they have done in the past, they cannot do anything.
So that's Maya's function, to give us hope. Despite the fact that it is not possible, but Maya gives us hope. So there's false intelligence, or material polluted intelligence, is dressing the same thing in a new way to attract our minds, so that we have that hope. That's Maya's function in there. And the proper use of actual intelligence is returning to Krishna's shelter. So we have two exemplars in this. Two people, one of them is a Mahajana and one of them isn't, but they're exemplars, that if we follow their example, we will get all perfect results. And the first one is Prahlad Maharaj. Now read one of his, he was in a most difficult circumstance, but he was and not in anxiety. His own father was trying to kill him continuously, and he was free from anxiety. He was in difficulty, distress, etc., and disaster, practically speaking, continuously, but he was completely floating above it, like a lotus floats above the water. So here is one prayer that Prabhupada offered to, not Prabhupada, but Prahlad Maharaj offered to Lord Nisringadeva. He said, O Great One, O Supreme Lord, because of combination with pleasing and displeasing circumstances, this defines life, we go on. Pleasing circumstances, displeasing circumstances. And then because of separation from them, and it's always shifting, one is placed in a most regrettable position. We go up within heavenly, or we go down within hellish planets, as if burning in a fire of lamentation. There is another verse which describes the material world to the punishment of being placed in water until one can't breathe and then pulled up. And the happinesses of material life are compared to the being pulled up when you're almost drowned and you're going, and that's the happiness, and then pushed down again. So it is like a fire of lamentation when a little bit of the covering of Maya, of the hope that happiness is just around the corner, is removed. Then it becomes a burning place, the material life, with no shelter, practically speaking. And then, so you're in a difficult situation, and Prahlad says, well, there must be some remedy, but although there are many remedies by which to get out of material life, any such remedies in the material world, they are more miserable than the miseries themselves. So we don't like walking, it takes so long to walk. So we get ourselves a fancy... Well, okay, or you get yourself a good motorcycle or something like that, or you get, and then you're stuck in traffic, or it's been proven that people are looking, when they're driving cars, they're looking, when they decide they want to change lanes, they're looking for cars and aren't looking for motorcycles, so even if a motorcycle is right there, they don't see it. It's proved. People's illusion is like that. So, motorcycle, people hit, no protection. Cars, traffic jams. Petrol prices go up, car breaks down, on and on and on. And then and someone else has a newer car than you, and your children are complaining, how come? So the solution is worse than the problem that it was somewhat inconvenient to walk from place to place. Therefore, he says what the refuge is, and this is perfect intelligence, the only remedy is to engage in your service. Kindly, my dear Lord Nisringadeva, instruct me in such service. So Prahlad is our great exemplar of this, because in the most difficult situation, he, well, we'll find out what he gained by getting this service. Because here we are, this is very important, here we are in the material world, which is a dangerous, difficult, and... disastrous place. So how are we going to live in here? Live in this place? We are here. So how to live in it in such a way that we're not affected by these things and don't suffer? And Prabhupada's going to speak right here about what Prahlad gained and what he wanted to, what Prabhupada himself wanted to distribute. Now we won't be tricked this time. If it goes on, it means it's the next one. Yes, it's the next one. Go right to the next one. This will be Krishna willing. Prabhupada speaking again. Oh, this is the last, because we could have made a mistake. But either that or we... I could have...
Indra...
No, when it hit...
Can supply...
This isn't the one we want.
Water.
Hit it... Just either F5, hit F5.
Or sometimes he or does not supply. Or sometimes he supplies over... Over the current. Over the
Try the next one.
Anavrishti means no.
Okay, quiet. Yeah, try that one, see if that one works. I think we missed that last one, but it's so interesting what Prabhupada says in this conversation with His Holiness Bhakti Sridharma Maharaj. He explains that the scientists are promising so many things, but they can't really deliver the satisfaction that they're promising. But what we want to distribute and give people is what Prahlad Maharaj had. And Prahlad, in the most difficult circumstance, was completely unaffected and peaceful because he was taking shelter of Krishna. So that was, I really wanted to play that one. It was very... quite wonderful. But we will now move to the second exemplar that we wanted to speak about. Because this is what we're looking for. We're in the material world now, and the material world can be seen in two ways. One, as the most frustrating place if we are pushed by false ego to view the material world as the place of our happiness. And the place where we can actually achieve the satisfaction that we're longing for. And then the material world becomes the greatest disappointment. And people, when they're older, become so cynical. Because that's all they know is the material world. And they've come across so much misery in the material world. And when they were young, they had so much hope for their lives and for happiness, for peace. And it was dashed to bits by the actual life experience itself. So people, when they're elderly, they become very cynical. Like I remember reading, there was one of the past presidents or prime ministers of India after Indira Gandhi was Morarji Desai. Yes? You know him? He was Gujarati also. Yes? You know him? Okay. And he lived to how old? Something like over 95. He was like 96 or 97 when he passed away. And I remember seeing a picture of him on his 97th birthday or something like that. And they had him, he was very, very old and wrinkly. And they had him, and he was dressed, they dressed him very specially for his birthday and everything like that. And he just said, I don't want to live, I just want to die. What's there to live for? What can you do? No more hopes, no more body that is capable of any enjoyment. No more teeth, no more seeing, no more digestive ability. No more tongue can't taste in the same way. Can't run, can't walk. All your friends, khatam ho gaya. That's Hindu. Everyone's gone. I don't want to live anymore. So when one is older, the hope that Maya gives you when you're young, that yes, life is going to be like this, my marriage is going to be like this, my career is going to be like this, and the children are going to be like this. When one's young, one goes on the anticipation, the hope. But then when one's older, it's gone. And one becomes cynical and miserable. What's the reason? Depressed. Why get up in the morning? And I've seen the people in the old age homes, too. They just wheel them out, and they're always in bad moods, and all they do is they put them in front of a television for the day, and they just... So they don't have to think, basically, if they still can think. So that's one... If one is governed by false ego, that's how one ends. If one lives to old age, that's what one's consciousness very easily can become. If one sees the material world very idealistically as a place to enjoy. But for a devotee, he sees the material world and his life's experience in quite a different way. He sees life in the material world as a field for learning the art of taking shelter of Krishna. And there, having taken shelter of Krishna, like Prahlad Maharaj took shelter of Krishna, like Kunti Devi took shelter of Krishna, there is the greatest sweetness, there is the greatest satisfaction, there is the greatest safety, and it is irreversible. And once, if we do gain that shelter, there is no situation in the material world, no matter what it is, that can pull it from us if we actually strongly take shelter of the boat of Krishna's lotus feet. We can cross the ocean of material life. This is the purpose of the Bhagavatam, to teach us this art. This is what Prabhupada said when he was in that morning walk that we unfortunately didn't hear. He said, that's what we are giving. That's what we are teaching. To give a shelter, an actual shelter, an asraya. Krishna is the asraya tattva. He is the tenth tattva that's described in the Bhagavatam, asraya. He's giving that, Mahaprabhu gave that in such a way, in a simple way for everyone. There's the Bhagavatam, but there's the holy names. There's the association of devotees, but especially that's what goes on in the association of devotees. But the holy names, the Bhagavatam, the holy Dham, these are our shelters, the association of devotees. So you see, Radha Balava, these are our shelters. And they are shelters that can give us shelter, not just promises and hopes that cannot be fulfilled, because that's what Maya tells us. Pashana pi na pashyati. Does anyone know the beginning of that verse? Second canto, perhaps the first chapter? Dehepatra, kala. Atma sannyasa satra. These are the soldiers, the family, the bank balance, the country, or this, that, the children. This is what people take shelter of, the house, their sense of identity, their strength, personal strength, their influence, who they know, their credit card, their mobile phone. When we leave the house, we make sure we have our mobile phone with us, just in case something happens. We make sure we have our credit cards with us, just in case something happens, like a nuclear bomb falls on us and we can at least have our credit cards to save us, or our phone, or the earthquakes and the whole buildings fall down and at least we have our credit cards with us. These are false shelters, the shelters that Maya offers. We can use everything in Krishna's service, but we should not think that they are our shelters. We shouldn't take shelter of things that have no capacity to actually give us shelter. So we'll be discussing these points a bit further, but now let's talk about the other way to look at the world, the way that Kunti Devi looked at it, not the way that the materialist looks at the world. But Kunti Devi was in continuous difficulty. So much so that the sound, but it's not sounding. The Kunti Devi says, despite the fact that she was in so many calamities continuously, her sons were removed from, cheated out of the kingdom, their rightful kingdom. They were, all of them were going to be burnt. Now Duryodhana, he was a perfect example of a person who had, who was so dangerous because he had powerful material intelligence, but it was based on false ego and envy. And he saw the Pandavas as his competitors, and what did he try to do? Poison, burn, kill them. You cannot be the king. I want to be the king. I deserve it because I'm me. And Kunti Devi was the victim of all this. Innocent victim of all this. And then, after she became, her sons, Yudhisthira became the king after the battle of Kurukshetra was fought, and Krishna was about to leave, she says this sweet verse that we just heard. I don't know if we could possibly get it to play again. It was so nice to hear Prabhupada chant it. Let's see if we can make it happen. You can chant along with Prabhupada. I wish, she says, exactly the opposite of the way a materialist thinks, who's trying to push away all the difficulties and pull all the pleasures and thinking that the universe is supposed to cooperate with my desires for my pleasure. She's saying, I wish all those calamities would happen again and again. What she is afraid of and what she's trying to avoid is not the calamities of the world that are unavoidable, but rather what she sees as a calamity is that Krishna is leaving. I wish that all those calamities would happen again and again so that we could see you again and again. For seeing you means that we will no longer see repeated births and deaths. But actually, even on the highest level, the devotees, Janmani, Janmani, Svare, Vavadchad, Bhakti, Ahaitiki, Tre, they don't mind even repeated births and deaths if they could be with Krishna by the process of chanting and hearing about him. It is possible. And this is the mission of the Krishna Consciousness Movement, to spread this wealth, this knowledge. To not only spread it though, but to take it. To take it, to taste it, and as we're tasting it, to distribute it. That's actually the teachings of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Tasting himself and distributing what he's tasting. That shelter, that sweet shelter of Krishna's lotus feet. And that as a byproduct, having attained that shelter of Krishna, as a byproduct, not as the goal, not as the prime purpose of it, but as a byproduct, no more repeated birth and death, because you have Krishna. You're back home. You're back in your position, natural position. Eternity with eternity. The soul with his shelter, Krishna. And then, so I wanted to read also just a part of Prabhupada's purport to this, which summarizes sort of the message of this first class. The material world is certified by the Lord in the Bhagavad Gita as a dangerous place, full of calamities. Less intelligent persons prepare plans to adjust those calamities without knowing that the nature of this place is itself full of calamities. So it's like a choice. If you go to a restaurant and they say, what would you like? So the material world is, okay, which calamity would you like? or you're tired of calamities, would you like a disaster? Or how would you like a difficulty? You want to just move back and forth between one and the other, and then as Prahlad Maharaj said, you can have some pleasure, but it's temporary, and you know the disaster is around the corner. Ultimately, it's the fifth D that we didn't even talk about is the big D, death. And everyone we know, everyone we love, everyone we want to be always with, and our very body itself is doomed to death. No one survives. Calamity. So less intelligent persons prepare plans to adjust those calamities without knowing that the nature of this place is itself full of calamities. They have no information of the abode of the Lord, which is full of bliss and without trace of calamity. The duty of a sane person, therefore, is to be undisturbed by worldly calamities, which are sure to happen in all circumstances, and suffering of all sorts of unavoidable misfortunes, while one should make progress in spiritual realization, because that is the mission of human life. So that sort of summarizes what we wanted to say, but here in this first part of the class. And then sing along with Prabhupada, please. One who is on the path of material progress, in other words, one who is taking shelter, not of Krishna, but of the things that everyone in this world does take shelter of, their birth, who they know, great opulence, their wealth, I can buy myself out of any situation, my high education, my knowledge will pull me through, I'll be able to get this job and that job, and I know this person and that person too. And my beauty. Such a person who takes shelter there cannot approach you with sincere feeling. In other words, there's the material shelters, and then there's Krishna. And sometimes we sort of get stuck in between. But we can't be stuck in between because once we take shelter of Krishna, even once sincerely, sakrideva vapanastvam tava asmi chayachete, even if one time we prayed to Krishna sincerely saying, I am yours, he never lets us go. He promises this. The Dhammitad Vritam Mama. But yet, we tend to have one foot in one boat, with one kind of shelter, and the other foot in another boat with another kind of shelter, with Krishna as the shelter. And sometimes Krishna has the boats go in different directions, and we end up in the water, but Krishna holds on tightly. Why are you laughing? Did that happen to you? It happens to me all the time. I end up in the water. But Krishna is so kind that he remains always with us. But yet, Kunti Devi is saying these kind of shelters, which she had completely rejected, because when I'm holding on to these things, I cannot sincerely call out Krishna, 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 Krishna with a full heart, because I'm calling out to Krishna, and on the other hand, I'm looking in my wallet for my mobile phone and my credit cards while I'm calling out to Krishna. So I'm half here and half there. So the same intensity isn't there if we fully calling out to Krishna. So these things can be used, and they must be used in Krishna's service, because they were created by Krishna's ingredients with intelligence that Krishna has supplied, by the lives of people that Krishna has given life to. They are Krishna's to be used, but we should not take shelter of them and make them our shelter, thinking foolishly and obviously that they can protect us. And it's difficult to touch these things and not get entangled. So therefore, Nirbandha Krishna, Sambandha Yukta Varagishate. One has to be very dedicated on the Krishna service side, otherwise we get entangled when we try to use these things in Krishna's service. They are very sticky. So, my Lord, your Lordship, she's saying to Krishna, can easily be approached, but only by those who are akinchana gochara, who don't have any shelters in the material world, who don't consider anything in the realm of matter, even their body, as their shelter. And then such a person who takes shelter of Krishna so fully, you are easily approachable. And now Krishna, she's saying, you're leaving, and to me, my shelter is leaving. Please don't. And then the third verse, which is the last one, we'll hear. Sing along, please. Dance along.
Namo Kunjana Vishaya Nishikya Bhunadishkai Atmanamaya Shantaya Kaivalya Patale.
Namo kinsana vitaya, akinsana, the word is there again. Those akinsana gochara, that you are the property, vitaya, you are the property. You become purchased. You are the property of those who take shelter of you and of nothing of the and of nothing in the material world. They are taking shelter of you. They don't own anything in the material world. They don't value as shelter anything in the material world. You are their all that they value, and they purchase you by that. You are their property. This is the nature of Krishna. This is the nature of the Lord that we are aspiring to take full shelter of. He is Bhakti Vatsalya Atma Pajanta Vadanyata. He's soft-hearted. So the devotees have a different view of the material world than the materialists. And the difficulties they view in a different way. And that will be the subject of this afternoon's class more, so we won't describe that. too much now. But here, so Kunti Devi and Prahlad are so much exemplars. So she offers obeisances. My obeisances unto you who are the property of the materially impoverished. It doesn't mean that one has to become a poor beggar. But it means that one should not take shelter of whatever one Krishna has put in one's possession to be used in his service. One should not make that one's shelter. One should make Krishna one's shelter. Because Krishna can be relied on. Continuing, she says, you have nothing to do with the actions and reactions of the material modes of nature. You are transcendental. You are beyond. You are self-satisfied. But yet you make yourself the property of those who take full shelter of you. Even though you are fully satisfied, you are purchased. You don't want anything, but yet the love of your devotees who take shelter of you, who are Saranagata, who are surrendered devotees, makes you theirs. You are the most gentle. He does not want to hurt anyone. And he's the master of the monists. The monists see him as impersonal, but it is he who is their master. He is the person. Okay. So that is the end of... Let's see, we went a bit over. Okay. We'll end at 12:15. What time is it now, according to the official...
12:02.
Okay. So we'll have a few minutes for questions till 12:15, if there's any questions. And some of them I may defer to, if you have questions, I may defer to other classes if we'll be speaking about those topics. And, but first I'll ask you, what do you remember from our little presentation? Anyone remember any points or any points strike them? Raise your hands. Well, your teacher didn't do a very good job. No one remembers anything. Yes, thank you.
I'm a new devotee of Krishna Bhakta. I just joined last year. I have one question.
First do you remember something? I know you remember something. Because you have a good memory. You remember that you were trying to be a devotee and you just began chanting last year. So what do you remember from what we spoke about? Something that struck you.
That Krishna is transcendental, he doesn't have to do anything with action and reaction of the material modes of nature.
Yes, thank you. Okay. What was your question, Prabhu? What is your name?
Virendra.
Virendra? Virendra. 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 Good.
Spiritual world, material world is a reflection of the spiritual world. So, like, how you will justify this thing, like, in material world, like, a lot of calamities like earthquakes and disasters, what we were discussing here, and also disaster, difficulties, person faces in one's life. So, in spiritual world, is there also these things? Because how
there's the this is the reflection, you get the reflection here. But in the spiritual world, there are no calamities at all, because everything has to do with Krishna. And everything produces the externals of the same. Like Krishna leaves, walks behind a tree, and the devotees cannot see him for a moment. So for them, it's a calamity. But that calamity causes them to get closer to Krishna and call out Krishna's name because they miss him, and it causes ecstasy. So in the material world, in the reflected realm, the difficulties, disasters, calamities, etc., it causes true misery because there's no shelter. But in the spiritual world, anything that happens, all the devotees have a complete shelter. They only have one wealth, and that's Krishna. So everything that happens brings them closer to Krishna, which causes them a different kind of ecstasy. So misery doesn't exist in the spiritual world, but the reflection of misery exists. The misery exists in the material world, and the substance is different activities that could resemble the activities of the material world that cause misery, but they cause ecstasy in the spiritual world. Is that relatively clear? But dire, no problem.
So you mean if the devotees in the spiritual world can't see Krishna for a moment, so it's like that kind of misery. And material world.
But that's the misery, but that misery causes ecstasy.
Yeah.
Because they're thinking, Krishna, Krishna, where are you? So if we can somehow miss Krishna in this world, then we can be in the spiritual world and not get distracted. We do our duties, but we do them, somehow we connect them to Krishna and do it for His pleasure. But if everything causes us to miss Krishna and take shelter of Krishna, which again will be the subject of this afternoon's class, then the material world will be seen in its proper light as a training ground, a field for training that brings us closer to Krishna, not as a place that will cause us frustration because we have hopes of happiness that cannot appear here. Is that sort of clear? Yes, thank you. Does anyone remember anything? Yes. Yes.
The material world is made of bodies. It starts with disappointment, distress, difficulties, disaster, and finally death.
Yes. Does it make you happy to think of the material world? I don't want this to be a class everyone walks out of and, oh yeah, the material world, oh. But if we can somehow capture the jewel that the material world is trying to offer us, and that is the lotus feet of Krishna, then wherever we are is ecstasy, because then one sees Krishna. Did you see that little slideshow I made last night? Were you here? Yomam Pashyat. If you can see Krishna somehow or another, if we can capture the essence of all experience and find Krishna in it. And this is one of the things that it's very easy to theoretically talk about, philosophize about it. But when it's happening to you, some extreme difficulty or something, not easy to hold on to the lotus feet of Krishna. Because then you come to grips with all the fact that you've taken shelter of so many false things. But you're attached to them. So we need to practice this. And this will come up tomorrow very, very strongly. But we need to know the theory so we know what to practice. But we need to actually apply this to our life. Now, I know that some of you have been very heavily tested in these things, in difficult situations, in disasters, calamities, practically speaking, where that which you thought was your shelter and secure, suddenly, it wasn't there anymore. Or the fear of it being gone was imminent. And then it's terrifying. When there's a disappointment, it's not terrifying, it's just disturbing. But when you're on the distress level, you find out that you have some terrible disease or something like that, and it's life-threatening, then your whole Maya part of your life, or the temporary part of your life, it drops out, and your heart becomes filled with terror unless you have a real shelter to fill it with. And the most frightening thing, in one sense, is that this is going to happen to everyone, no matter how old or young we are, because that fifth D is complete in this material. Even Lord Brahma, who lives for countless trillions of years, he has his time when he has to confront this. And it's not fun. In fact, it's terrifying. So life is meant for this kind of, for waking up to what reality is. Because we could, like a child playing in the sand by the ocean, building so many things and perfectly happy until the wave comes and knocks it away. And it's time his mother takes him home. So we tend to distract ourselves with these little with playing here. But here's my favorite prop for this point. But our time is running out, second by second by second by second. So I don't mean it to be one of those frightening classes, you know, you're all going to die, you know, you don't know when you're going to die, you know, it might be as soon as you walk out this door, you know, Beaver the dog may lick you to death or something like that. I don't mean to be that, because I prefer to emphasize the positive, is that we want to hold on to Krishna, we want to hold tightly to Krishna, and in that experience, like when we in kirtan, when the kirtan's wonderful and it's been going on long enough so that our minds don't interfere with our chanting and taking shelter of Krishna's names, we get a taste of the spiritual world in there. And Mahaprabhu came to give. It said that he caused Vaikuntha to descend through the congregational chanting of the holy names. When we hear Bhagavatam about Krishna, we can actually enter into that realm of Vrindavan. Not enter into it in one sense, but yes, get a taste of it. And it's a different flavor than this world. And we want that flavor. That flavor satisfies the hankerings of the heart. While the material elements, no matter how much we cover ourselves with, it doesn't satisfy the heart. So it's a positive message we are hoping to just use these things. You have to use them, and we're not perfect, and we're not going to do it perfectly, maybe. But we should know where we have to go, and we should practice this. This is our true sadhana. To practice taking shelter of Krishna. This is our saranagati. Yes.
Probably one of the things that stood out in my mind during the class was your references to Prahlad Maharaj and him saying, you know, the remedy is for you to engage me in your devotional service, please instruct me in this matter. And the potency of their prayers, given his extreme circumstances, like Lord Nrsimhadev, I mean, Hiranyakashipu was saying to his own son, I'm going to chop off your head. You know, I mean, if my parents would say that to me, I'd be like, oh my God, it's over.
And he just, what can you do? Because you're dependent on them. The person you're dependent on is trying to kill you.
And there are some very cruel people in this world with those demoniac propensities. It's very real. You can see it all the time in the news and hear about it. So, those prayers I find quite important.
Yeah. We should hold on to the prayers of these great persons. Even our realization may not be up to their level, but by holding on to them, we speed up. Like in Vrindavan, you still see it. You don't see it in many other places in India anymore. Like the poor fellow riding along on the bicycle, and then he finds a bus, and he holds on to the bus while he's on his bicycle. He grabs onto the back of the bus, and suddenly, while he could only go 5 kilometers an hour, suddenly he's speeding along at 60 kilometers an hour or 100 or... Of course, it is dangerous to hold on to a bus. You don't know what's going to happen next. But But that's what we hold on to, the prayers and the concepts and the thoughts and the mood of the acharyas, our exemplars. And we can taste what they're tasting by holding on, because we're, our speed increases. We have our own prayers. We'll be speaking about this tomorrow morning. Yes. And then this is the last one, and then I want to have a break.
Krishna's shelter is so magnanimous, and material world is so harsh, but still we're unable to take shelter because of false ego. As long as false ego is there, mind makes us think that this is a nice place to be.
Yeah. And Maya gives us a hope. Just like Prabhupada also talks about the goats who were lined up at the slaughterhouse, one after the next, and what are they doing? They're eating grass, thinking this grass is very nice. And then Prabhupada tells Cedric, the goat next, right in front of one goat, they take his head and put it down on the block, and the goat right behind says, "Whew, that was close." We see it all the time. I mean, everyone knows, but no one. But due to false ego, we keep a hope alive, and we're afraid to trust Krishna. But we trust the material world. Okay, so what time is it according to the official? Is there an official clock somewhere behind? What time? What does it say?
20 past 12.
Okay, so please come back at 10 minutes, and okay, go breathe, jump around, but try to keep these thoughts in your mind. As you do it, we'll call it a focus break. But be back here exactly on time, because otherwise it's going to be quite problematic for me. So take a 10-minute break. You've all been listening very, very carefully and sitting very patiently. So go and breathe. Breathe some good, fresh, nandigram air. But keep your mind on these things and be back exactly on time. Please. Thank you.